Hello, and thank you for joining today's Family Office in Focus podcast. My name is Mark Tepsik, and I'm the Family Office Design and Governance Strategist for UBS here in the Americas. For today's podcast, I'm joined by Josh Gentine, founder of Bench Consulting, a family enterprise governance consulting firm. The conversation will center around an article Josh recently wrote in our UBS Family Office Quarterly on family participation plans. Before we begin, I want to mention that Josh and Bench Consulting is on a professional network, but is not affiliated with UBS, and this is not a recommendation of or a business referral to him or his firm. Josh, great to have you here today.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Yeah, of course. Look forward to the conversation. So with that said, let's dive right in. So Josh, tell me about how you came to start Bench Consulting. Really, what roads led you here?
It was not a straight line, Mark, as you may be familiar with. I grew up in a family business, Sargento Foods, based in Wisconsin, cheese manufacturer, and figured I would go into that business. I got a lot of pressure to go back to the family business, and did all of the things. We'll be talking about a family participation plan here shortly, but followed the plan to set myself up to go back, and was also thinking about being a Catholic priest. So two very different paths in life, and realized if I didn't explore that question that I was going to always question my decision, and I wouldn't be a good leader if I hadn't explored the seminary. So I ended up getting my MBA, and then I went to Notre Dame to be a Catholic priest. And about a year after being there, I had a very clear moment of this is not where I'm being called. So I called Deloitte Consulting instead and joined their team, doing M&A integrations for about 4 years, a lot of governance and decision rights. While I was with Deloitte, I started coaching and ended up having a client on the outside who had a large family company. And he essentially asked me to help him build the family governance that we had at Sargento for his family and his family's company. And in doing that work, just fell in love with it. Fell in love with the experience, being able to guide the family. I'd lived through a lot of the issues that they were dealing with and came to recognize that this is where I need to be spending my time. So I eventually left Deloitte and started working with families full time. So it wasn't a straight road, Mark, but it got me to where I am. So and I joke at this point, I feel like I'm 70% pastor and 30% strategist, given the work I'm doing with families.
That's a great and a lot of different perspectives there that I think, you know, they're all very relevant, clearly, right? The family business kind of history, the seminary, the MBA, you know, Deloitte Consulting, clearly. And then, it just led you to found Bench and kind of doing the work that you're doing today.
Right.
So great perspective. But, you know, I mentioned a little bit earlier, you wrote a great piece in our recent Family Office Quarterly on family participation plans. You know, we definitely appreciate the contribution. It's been very well received. Can you give us a rundown of a participation plan, like what they are, why they're useful, kind of the whole nine yards?
Yeah. A family participation plan, also sometimes called a family employment policy, really guides family members who are owners or potential owners in the future. It guides them on the expectations as it relates to their involvement in the business. And, you know, Mark, whether it's a family office or a family operating company, being clear about the expectations as it relates to family members' involvement goes a really long way towards mitigating conflict within a family. And as you can imagine, if one family member comes into the business has one set of rules, and another family member comes in, you know, 5-10 years later has a completely different set of rules, it's going to lead to tension in some way, shape, or form. And I see it every day, unfortunately. So the family participation plan creates a set of guidelines for what is it going to mean to be a family member involved in the business. And that can range from the criteria for joining the business, such as what education do you need to have to come back to the business? How much experience outside do you need to have before you come back to the business? What is the process for coming in? Do you just get a job or do you go through the application process? Does the family create a job for you or does there have to be an open role? So we've got criteria for joining. It It will outline training programs, exposure that family members may need while they're working in the organization. We're going to talk about total rewards. What are the expectations in terms of compensation and benefits for family members? Getting into things like marriage contingencies and how are we handling spouses and their coming into the organization. And it also goes through one of the really interesting points that we have in our policy that I recommend to a lot of families is, how do you manage a family member who is in the business? That can also be a really uncomfortable situation. And so outlining as many different scenarios as possible, thinking those through, and then coming up with policies and provisions around those different scenarios is the family participation plan. And, you know, every plan is slightly different, and it's really predicated on the family, what they're trying to accomplish, the type of enterprise that they have, and how they want to operate it. And, you know, our policy is not going to look the same as your policy, Mark, but ideally what it does is it level sets on expectations. And I think that's probably the biggest thing is helping guide family members to think through, if I'm going to be involved in the business, this is what it's going to look like. Do I want to sign up for that or not?
Yeah, I think the key word you said at the beginning was clarity, right? So, you know, I've been around family businesses, I mean, not as a family member, but really as an employee, as an advisor. And that is a big thing, right? It's like, hey, maybe I could join the family business, but what does it look like when I get there? I mean, putting aside the education and experience, but like, if I go into the business, like, what does my path look like, right? And I know that's, you know, not always a straight linear line, but I think that kind of opaqueness oftentimes, you know, sort of prevents some family members from joining because they just don't know what they're getting into. And they go, and then you leave after a couple of years, you know, what kind of issues and challenges does that cause? So, you know, how does that differ? How does the participation plan differ from the employment policy that a lot of family businesses have in place?
It's probably not all that different. We call ours a participation plan, recognizing that you know, part of what can be included in a participation plan, which is really not driven by HR or your board. This is a shareholder document, and it's talking about those expectations. And so you may have family members who also want to volunteer for the organization or get involved in some sort of capacity that isn't necessarily employment. But as you can imagine, you know, getting hyper clear about those expectations is really important as well, because you don't want family members inserting themselves into the organization. Again, whether that's an operating company or a family office, you don't want them inserting themselves into the organization as a volunteer and be like, well, I'm not on the payroll, so I can do this and that. No, you got to get really clear about those expectations, because ultimately you don't want the family members to become a source of tension for employees of that enterprise.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point, right? Participation is broader than really just employment. And, you know, your point about volunteer roles, I mean, you know, I've seen a lot of family members that are taking essentially no salary or a very low salary, depending on the role, especially if they're, frankly, older, if they really just don't need the salary, right? They're getting a distribution or something. So what about governance roles, right? You had mentioned like employment. I mean, I think that makes sense and it's intuitive, but governance is really another way to participate. And perhaps you already like covered this a little bit, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on this applied to like a governance role.
Yeah, if I think about governance, I mean, we really have to define, well, what is governance in this context? If I think about governance being, let's just take a family council. What would it look like to be on a family council or a board of directors? And I think depending on what that body is and what that specific role is, you want to be very clear around decision rights and what is in scope versus what is out of scope, and how are we going to operate as family members in this role that we're in. as you can imagine, Mark, being, if let's just take the board of directors, for instance, and you've got a family member who's on a board, whether that's a fiduciary or an advisory board, they're on that board of directors. If we're not clear about what is in scope versus out of scope for their role as a board member and where they can and cannot insert themselves into an organization, it's really, really important, because you want to create, yes, clarity for the family members, but also create clarity for the employees of that organization around, you know, do I take direction from a family member, even if they're not my boss, but they're on the board? Do I take direction from a family owner because they're on the family council, but they may not actually be involved in the business? So it's creating that clarity in sort of every body that a family owner may be involved in. It's important because again, clarity and expectations mitigate conflict at some point. And so the more clear you can get, the better.
Great points. So, you know, let's assume that, you know, which it is, most families, that basically any family that's multi-generational should have something like this in place, right? Employment participation plan. What's the process look like to get there? Because it's, you know, I kind of make the analogy to like estate planning, like, yeah, you can rip a will off the internet, but it's really irrelevant to you as a specific individual, right? So I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts are to creating a sustainable and effective participation plan.
Yeah. The plan is worthless without the conversation and the process to get there. And in fact, the process is more important than the paper that the plan is written on, because this is really about aligning on values, aligning on what does it mean to be an owner, a principal? What does it mean to be family? And what are we trying to achieve? And so what I always recommend to families, if they're thinking about creating the clarity for family members' involvement, let's just say in their family office, is sitting down and, first of all, putting this on the table and saying, here's the why. Here's why this is important to create a set of expectations, and recognizing that there is potential conflict without clarity around expectations. It's articulating that and articulating the fact that, you know, as a family, it's really important that we stay connected. It's important that we stay together. If that is truly the intent, is to build a multi-generational enterprising family, then being clear about all these things is critical to our success as a family and the family system. So it's first putting that on the table. And then, you know, whether it's using outlines from us, from you guys, from any organization that has gone through this process with clients, you know, it's really looking at what are the different, policies that we should have in place. You go through a scenario planning process and think through all of the what ifs. And, you know, it's unfortunately, like a lot of things, it's not what if things are going well. It's what if things aren't going well, and how do we want to handle those situations? And what are the nuances that are unique to our family that we want to give consideration to? And then talk openly and honestly about how we want to handle it, recognizing that ultimately you're trying to protect the family and the enterprise with these expectations that you're putting in place. And, you know, Mark, you and I have talked in the past, and I know it's a challenge for a lot of families and family offices, but, you know, recruiting and retention, having clarity around family members' involvement drives retention of employees, because everyone knows exactly what to expect. And if you can anchor into those bigger whys behind the plan, it's really easy to create alignment across the family, assuming everybody's on the same page. And you're not going to be on every provision. I mean, I just went through this exercise with our family over the last several months, and, you know, we had, a few of us drafted a straw man model. It was a revision from our G2 to G3 plan, and we're now working on our fourth generation. But we drafted kind of a straw man model. We socialized with all of our family members. We held listening sessions for all of our family members, where they could come to me and say, "Hey, these are the thoughts that we have. This is what we're thinking through. These are some of the challenges." We talked about it, we debated it, and ultimately came up with a plan that everybody agrees with. And they agree with it because they understand the bigger why. And for us, we have now taken that plan, and we use our board of directors to help us implement that plan. And it's socialized across the entire family so that everybody understands this is what it means to be an owner. And it's not a right, but it's a benefit. And this is the responsibility that comes with that ownership. And I think it has, the process helped us articulate things that we hadn't thought about. The process also allowed us to engage different generations, different family branches in something that was collaborative and constructive, and ultimately the thing that the next generation is going to live by and for as they go forward.
So I love the why. I mean, that's always, you know, the true reason why you're doing anything and everything. But I want to go back to what you said. You know, you had mentioned recruiting and retention, and obviously, you know, in any business, right, you know, 98% of the employees are going to be non-family, right? And so,
yes.
How does, where are they at, I guess, in this process? You know, how does this influence or affect them? Just sort of like broad dynamics or maybe some anecdotes there on how they are kind of woven into this.
Yeah, I think it's first of all, I think they are, depending on your family enterprise, depending on the office, the operating company, whatever it might be, how you view your employees matters in terms of how you design this plan and whether those are relationships or transactional relationships. It does matter. So I think they're kind of a grounding why first and foremost. Second, when we think about tactics, in our example, in our case, our family was driving the design of our plan. And it really is, it was driven by the shareholders and it's for the shareholders, and we socialize it with the board and members of the leadership team of the organization would be read into that plan once family members get involved in the business. So the employees are in our situation, and you can have your senior leadership team weigh in on different provisions of your family participation plan. But for us, it was really a shareholder-driven exercise. And where the employees come in is we socialize this plan and share this plan with HR, in our case, Sargento. And so they are aware of what does it look like for a family member to move through the organization. What does it look like for promotion or heaven forbid, termination? What are the things that we need to be about? And what is the, let's call it the governance as it relates to family members getting promoted or terminated? And we have a process for exactly what that looks like to make sure that it's a fair process and it's an objective process. And it isn't based on family dynamics. It's based on performance and so forth. So HR is looped in. And then, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things that we have in our plan, which I think is a really good, whether it's in your plan or it's just talked about in your organization, I think it's really important that anybody who is in a position of managing a family member, there should be a conversation about the expectations as it relates to managing a family member. Because that employee is put into a potentially awkward situation if the family member is not performing well. And so you want to think through, how do we have those conversations? How do we make sure that that employee feels safe to express the fact that a family member might not be performing in the organization? And you want to go through that exercise. And so you certainly would loop them into the process and socialize the plan with them or anyone that's sort of working around that family member. And then on the farthest sort of edges, while you would never share your family participation plan with the organization at large, it is, I think, valuable to express to employees, especially the members of the leadership team, that there is a plan in place. There are expectations in place. This is something that family members have agreed to because it builds confidence in the family as leaders, that these roles are not handouts. They are earned roles, and there is a process, and there are expectations, because you want the employees to feel that they can trust the family members who are involved in the business, and you want the family members to have the confidence that what's happening to them in their career throughout, you know, an organization is earned and not just given, because they need to have the confidence and feel like, hey, I can do this. And it isn't just because of my last name. It's because of the ability, my ability to perform in my role.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the key points is, you know, there are expectations. You don't have to communicate the exact details to the non-family. But I think that goes a long ways towards, like, not crushing the culture. You know, if non-family knows that, like, listen, it's just not like, hey, anybody can have a job here if you're a family member, right? There's accountability and expectations. So that's great. So we've got, you know, we've just got a few minutes left. And if there's anything you'd like to leave our listeners with, right? This could be anything, like your favorite Sargento cheese flavor or whatever. we'd love to hear about it.
Well, two things. First, I'll lead with the fact that the conversations that a family has as it relates to their involvement in their enterprise, family office, family operating company, doesn't matter. The conversations that they have and being able to sit at a table, and whether you're creating a policy or a program or not, being able to sit at the table and talk about the expectations is the most important thing any family can do. And, you know, as I look at the work that we do with families, enterprising families, whether, again, operating company or a family office, families that have the ability to sit down and have a meaningful conversation, they avoid so many of the pitfalls. Our job really becomes obsolete if they're able to have constructive dialogue. So I would encourage everybody to have good conversations with the family and talk about what does it mean to be involved and what are the expectations and level set on that. And then as I think about cheese here, Mark, I kind of joke because while I went to the Catholic seminary and I own a cheese company, I now go to the Episcopalian Church and I'm lactose intolerant. So God does have a sense of humor at the end of the day. And I think I ate too much cheese on the line, and so now I can't eat it. But I encourage our listeners to please go out and buy cheese.
Yeah, it's a great source of protein.
That's right.
So, hey, Josh, this was great. I definitely appreciate your time. I know our listeners will, and you know, always look forward to having a conversation and chat with you because I know I'm going to, you know, get something out of it and that I'm going to be able to use for our family offices and our family business folks out there. So for our listeners, thank you for joining us today. As always, if you have any questions, please do not hesitate to reach out to myself, your financial advisors, or others here at UBS, or Josh and Tina at Bench Consulting. So thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Take care.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, Josh.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.